This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is hour number three as we roll along this morning here on your Friday. I started this show 2 hours ago talking about the Combine, and it's not necessarily an American love affair with this event. I don't think many people are gravitating towards the TV watching workouts, but I do think there's a level of interest in what is going on there that is different than any other pre-draft workout type of evaluation that we have in any other sport. And I like it because I like the way the NFL has done the business of the league. But that being said, I think we get a little too crazy with this sometimes. You know, we watch 40-yard dashes where players aren't in pads. We watch, you know, we're measuring hand size, as I was talking about in hour number one, and breaking down debates about that. You can have a terrible combine and be an excellent NFL player. You can have a great combine and be a terrible NFL player. It's like anything else in sports. You just don't know until you know. And you don't know what the circumstances will come up for certain players. I mean, Joe Burrow, fantastic, obviously, pick for the Bengals, right? But I don't think very many people thought Super Bowl that quickly. Andrew Luck was a surefire franchise quarterback, and I don't think many people thought by the time he turned 30, he'd be out of the league because of just way too many injuries. It's a warning for teams to be really careful at this place when you go up there and you're starting to see the measurements and the drills and the interviews and the Wunderlich test. That's another one that I think people are overly fascinated with, who scored what on the Wunderlich test. But the reality of it is, look at the way the business of the NFL operates. Everything is, you know, they do is public consumption. They're going to put it on TV. They're going to have people talking about it. And I think one of the brilliant things that it did do was it allowed reporters to go there to talk about the future of teams. And what you're starting to see is the conversations are starting to come up about some of these offseason questions because all the GMs are in Indianapolis. We're going to explore one of those questions. If you're San Francisco, what do you want and what do you want to do with Jimmy Garoppolo in a trade situation? And what are teams actually going to be getting if they do land the quarterback from the 49ers? That's coming up next. Deshaun Watson, his name has been bandied about. This. Whenever general managers get together in Indianapolis, you know conversation gets a little bit thick.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. By the way, you going to go see the Batman anytime soon? That's now in theaters?
I want to. I just don't think I'm going to get to it this weekend.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't know. Like, if I can't find time to the theater, I have HBO Max. They say it's going to be on
in
mid-April.
That, and that, that's not the truth, right? If all of a sudden you're sitting there and you're like, well, 10 days from now.
Yeah, right. I could just watch it.
I'll just wait then.
Man, they say this is good. I say this is really good, this movie. And I was very skeptical. I am just getting tired of the same old, same old. And I was like,
in fact, I might have put it in the dumb once it was confirmed that Robert Pattinson.
Yeah, exactly.
I gave no credit to Cedric Diggory.
I know. I told my sister, who she likes these movies, and I said, oh, God, are we going to do this again? Like, we really can't just stop. They can't help themselves. They got to turn one of these out all the time. Different people playing this guy. And, ugh.
Yeah, can't they marvel it?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I mean, I do find it amazing that Marvel was able to keep the same Captain America for, like, 7 films.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, at one point, nobody went, I'm done. I'm out. I can't do this anymore.
Until it was all wrapped up, and they're like, nah. I'm good.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard rumors that Robert Downey Jr. might reprise his role as Iron Man in, like, flashback scenes.
Yeah, he probably will because he's probably like, you know, I actually liked doing that.
That was fun.
They paid me $20 million every time I do it. So I might as well do it.
Time I put that iron suit on.
But it's, you know, So I was thinking, oh, it's just another stupid superhero reboot. It's like when America's into something and they just go, yeah, don't you love it even more? Do you want more of this? Don't you want more? And America goes, yeah, wait, chill. But then the reviews started coming out and people were saying, this is great. The reviewers were like, I wanted to hate this and I could not hate this. In fact, I love it. It's that good. It's 3 hours long, though. 3 hours. I can sit in a theater for 3 hours, but by 2.5, I'm feeling it. So, but they say it's great. He said he's good. The story is good. The action is good. The mind, the clues and the mystery are very, very good. So there you go. Andy Serkis is in. He plays Alfred.
Yep.
They say you can't recognize Colin Farrell as the Penguin. He's unrecognizable. Paul Dano does a good job as the Riddler. So they say it's very well done.
I mean, your description of the Riddler from a few days ago.
Yeah.
That's what really has me intrigued, because I had not heard that.
Not mine. I forget who it was, but somebody said, I'll repeat it in case you missed it. It was that somebody said the way the Riddler is portrayed, it is at somebody could be that person in real life. It is realistic portrayal of somebody with that criminal mindset. You could
so
see
it's
that.
Not,
yeah.
It's not Jim Carrey wearing a question mark green suit.
Right, exactly. And I think that's the overall tone of the movie. Like, they say Batman doesn't get crazy with his gadgets. He doesn't go crazy with the... Because as I'm not trying to get all comic book geeky on everybody, but what makes Batman appealing to a lot of people, like, when I was younger, he was appealing, was that he had no superpowers, right? I think that was the thing. He was a rich guy who had fun tools, but he was a superhero. And when you watch, like, Super Friends when you were a kid, he was on the same level as, like, the people who did have superpowers. But they said that they made this movie with the idea that he was a human being. Like, he had limitations. When he fell wrong, it hurt. Like he didn't just bounce back. And when he got beat up, like you would expect. So that's kind of the theory. So I don't know. I'm not going to be able to see it for a while. So I got to stay away from the spoilers that are online in case there are any. I don't know. And by the way, Marvel got us trained to wait till the end of the credits to get a scene. Is DC followed suit or is that too copycatty?
I don't know. That's a great question.
You know? Do I have to sit there and watch the whole credits?
Yeah, I don't think they have done that yet.
No, don't think so.
They jumped into that world.
And Marvel doesn't make you wait till the very end. They shoot a couple and you watch a couple and then they go to the scene and then you get the 4,000 people that were involved somehow in the movie that deserve credit at the end. All right, so it's a little diversion because this weekend that movie is out now. So Jimmy Garoppolo. I want to explore Jimmy Garoppolo because, as I said at the top of the hour, the Combine allows general managers and player personnel to gather in one location. And because the media is going to be there, they're not really there to cover just the Combine. This is when they can get a collection of GMs together. And you can walk, even if you don't cover a team on a regular basis. Like if you cover Indianapolis, for example, the coaches, the Colts GM will be there. You could go to the Steelers and be like, yeah, just kind of curious your thoughts about your future without Ben Roethlisberger. You can do that kind of thing. So naturally, there's been a sort of a heated up discussion about, well, this offseason, what's going to happen to Jimmy Garoppolo? We know he is going to be on the move. We know the Niners are going to be entertaining offers for Jimmy Garoppolo. What kind of quarterback are they going to be getting? Because, look, there's no question that Jimmy Garoppolo wins a lot of games. He wins a lot of games. In fact, he's 31-14 during the regular season when starting for the 49ers. Now, when somebody else has started, Brian Hoyer, C.J. Beathard, Nick Mullins, even Trey Lance, they are 8-28. That is a huge disparity between your starting quarterback and everybody else who's playing the position. That is really, really steep. Now, here's the problem. I made this comment during the football season, which is, fair or unfair, wins are attached to the quarterback unlike any other position in sports. Maybe goalie in hockey, but quarterbacks get attached to wins and losses, and even if it's not really indicative of the way they play. Tom Brady is the best quarterback to have ever played the game. He has won games where he's played and he's lost games where he's played brilliantly. It's not a direct correlation, but we attach it to the quarterback position. So has Jimmy Garoppolo at 31-14 been a brilliant quarterback? No. He's won a number of games on defense, running game, etc. He's won it with his own arm. He's won it where he's just been game manager and somebody else has really contributed more than him. Doesn't matter. There's an attachment to Garoppolo in these wins and losses, even if you can pick them apart and say, well, here's this and that. That being said, so it doesn't necessarily mean when he's on your team or your team trades for him that that's what's going to happen. He had a lot of tools at his disposal that helped him win games. He had a defense that was very good. He had a running game that was good. He had weapons, you know, George Kittle, whatnot. So he may not have did to do it on his own. But I think about a team like Washington, and I think about a team like Pittsburgh. Maybe the quarterback of your future is in the draft somewhere. Maybe you look at the roster of quarterbacks and you say, well, there's maybe one guy I can get, and if I don't get him, I'm not really in love with everybody else, right? If that's the case, then Garoppolo becomes a very interesting pickup because he's a guy that can make you competitive, and you can find your quarterback, like what San Francisco's doing with Trey Lance. Malik Willis of Liberty, the guy we talked about earlier in the show that did those caught on camera doing this great deed for a homeless individual in Indianapolis, he didn't even know the cameras were on him, was wowing everybody at the Senior Bowl. Like, he was the guy that if you're an NFL team needing a quarterback, he might be the guy you pick as your next franchise guy. He might have that level of buzz come April. We'll see as more analysis of his skills gets brought out, but the initial buzz is that he's the guy. Let's say you're the Steelers and you don't land him. Let's say you're Washington and you don't land him. Let's say somebody moves up in the draft to grab him, whatever the circumstances may be. Do you want to take Kenny Pickett if you're not really sold on him? Do you want to take a quarterback in the draft if you're not really sold on him? Or do you go, what's it going to cost to get Jimmy Garoppolo? And let's see where this goes until we really, really find the guy we're in love with. You know, it's like being in a, it's like wanting a relationship. You shouldn't just grab any old girlfriend or boyfriend. You should, you know, you got to play it out in the right circumstances. Jimmy Garoppolo is a guy that you could go, I could bring him aboard, and he may not lead us to a division title, but he's going to win more games than anybody else, and he probably is going to win more games than a quarterback we're not in love with that we take in the first round and just give him the job. Right. So that being said, I think the Niners are, people are saying, well, maybe the Niners should keep them. I mean, after all, they just went to the NFC Championship game. A couple of years ago, they went to the Super Bowl. But the reality of it is the 49ers have made their bed with Trey Lance. This is not going to be a Jordan Love situation where the Green Bay Packers may never play Jordan Love the way they thought they were going to play Jordan Love. They may sign Aaron Rodgers to an extension and Love may get in when Rodgers finally retires, but maybe way later than they initially thought. This isn't the same situation. They saw Garoppolo. They liked another quarterback at that position, and they got that quarterback in that position. You sensed it when the final, you know, interview of the NFC Championship game, Garoppolo had that feeling. This was it. This was over. He was going on to somewhere else. But I do think he can still have a good career. I don't think he's a great quarterback. I'm not trying to sell you on his hidden greatness. I think we all kind of have an idea. But this is a league, for better or worse, has never developed that position well enough within its own system to have a plethora of quarterbacks that can play at a higher level. And whether you are impressed by him or not, and I know some of you aren't, you can't deny that he can be a starter for a lot of teams in this league. He is a starter in this league. It may just be on a team that is looking to rebuild a little bit until they find the franchise guy that can take him to the next level. But when you say next level, what exactly are you talking about? Because next level should mean Super Bowl, playoffs, deep run to the playoffs, which by my own recollection is exactly what he did for the San Francisco 49ers minus a title. It's a complicated situation.
And he's done it a couple times too.
And he's done it a couple times. It's a complicated situation because I know, despite him being a very good-looking quarterback, he's not the sexy pick you want under center. I don't think anybody who gets Garoppolo in a trade is going to say, that's the piece. We've got the piece now. If he comes to the Steelers, I will be like, okay. And maybe the ball bounces our way. We can snag another wild card appearance. But I don't think he's Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson good, right? And I don't think the Steelers will be on the level of those teams with those quarterbacks. But if he bridges a gap between – if he bridges the gap between Ben Roethlisberger and 5 years down the line when the Steelers draft Arch Manning, I'll be happy with those 5 years. Does that make sense? I'll take it.
Yep.
Right? So, God, if Arch Manning lands with the Steelers, I could not – I'm going to have to go to church because I'm going to owe somebody something if that's the case. Like, seriously, I'm going to owe the heavens something if Arch Manning goes to the Steelers in some weird way.
Just be careful that you don't get Manninged.
Yeah, right. Right?
Because, you know, I mean, we were all set. We were in line. I mean, fortunately, it worked out for the Chargers.
But, oh, without question, yeah.
But we were in line to get a Manning, and it looked promising, except he did not want to go there.
Can you imagine the Steelers have the number one pick, and it's Arch Manning, and you hear Archie going, my grandson is never going to be playing for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
The Steelers have to trade him.
Anywhere but Pittsburgh.
Anybody but Pittsburgh. We're warning you now, Steelers. You draft my grandson. He ain't going anywhere near that Steel City.
Oh, you know, we were kind of thinking Saints. Said, right, said his yeah. granddad right.
Exactly. But that's
bringing it full circle.
Back to the Garoppolo thing. I'm not low on Garoppolo. I'm not high on it. I'm not high on him. But I'm not hating the idea of him making a team a lot better.
And it's weird. He's a weird, it's like an anomaly.
Right.
Because he does win. He just, it's not pretty. And it's not convincing. And there's something off. You can't trust him fully. But the results are there.
It's like if you were hiring a CEO for your company, right? And you had a guy that came in and he gave you a resume or a recruiting service said, this is your guy. He's run this company and they did this and their quarterly profits were this and he streamlined this and he expanded this. And you go, my God, this is great. And then somebody comes up and goes, come here. That looks really good. But let me tell you the real story. Let me tell you the real, what that guy really is. That's kind of similar here. Like somebody from the outside of football may go, yeah, a guy that went to the Super Bowl and led the team to an NFC championship in a 3-year window. Yeah, why wouldn't you want him to be your quarterback? And then you go, yeah. Hold on. 31-8 as a starter? Yeah, why wouldn't you want him as a quarterback? Hold on. That's what we're dealing with.
It's just it's bizarre. Because like I said, man, he just wins.
He does.
And you know, and it's never convincing.
Nope, it really isn't.
And it's not pretty, and it's not sexy. And, you know, yes, he's sexy, but his gameplay is not.
It certainly is. The women love him, right? The women love him, but some of us go, okay. All right, we're going to be talking Duke basketball. Steve Wiseman's going to join us in 13 minutes. We're going to talk to him about what's going to go on in Durham this weekend and the legacy of Coach K that's coming up as we continue with Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, Steve Wiseman's going to join us, Harold's son. That's coming up in just a few minutes. We're going to talk Duke basketball, Mike Krzyzewski's final game. So you and I were talking about the players. Every single player who he has ever coached has been invited to the game. 200-plus players in
That's
the history
amazing.
Of the program. That is amazing.
I mean, first of all, it's amazing that in 40 years it's only 200 players.
That is true, right? Does that make sense? Yeah, because you'd have 400, but then you'd have 400 over the No, what would you have? You have 12 players on a college basketball team over 40 years? I'm doing the math.
Yeah.
500, but then some of those guys...
Stay for four years. Remember, you didn't have any one-and-dones.
You don't replace your roster all the time, and all the back-end people, like all your bench guys, stay 4 years.
Yeah.
It's like only at the top that really get out of there. So, yeah, maybe so. Yeah,
that hurts my brain.
It does hurt my brain. I'm gonna stop. Because
so what about current players? I mean, is Zion going?
Yeah, does Zion go, right? Is Kyrie going to go? Like, they look at the schedule and go, well, I'm not going to be playing in Brooklyn.
Is Kyrie allowed to go?
Is Kyrie allowed to go? But then we were talking about, like, Bobby Hurley is the head coach of the Arizona State Sun Devils. Like, would he skip his game this weekend?
He has to go.
And go? Like, he's playing Saturday.
He has to. I mean,
I would think so.
He's a Duke legend.
He's a Duke legend. Like, if you're a legend and you know you are, I would go. Like, I would go. Here's the thing. Bobby Hurley has to play it careful because he's not having a good year. So would it look bad if he told his bosses, can I go do this and leave the team? And then, they're like, oh, I don't want to hear it from all the fans that you left when the team was. But this is the only time in your life that the coach of your college team is leaving, is done.
Yeah,
this is now, an iconic moment.
I will say this: there has 9 players. I'm looking at a list of retired numbers. Duke has retired numbers.
Yeah,
there are 9 of these guys who played for Coach K. They better be there.
And Bobby Hurley's on that list.
Christian Laettner.
I would think
J.J. Redick. Jay Williams.
How about Danny Ferry? Is he one of those guys?
Danny Ferry did have his jersey retired, yeah.
How about Grant Hill? There you go.
Shane Battier.
Shane Battier, of course. Shane Battier of the Animal House Twitter reference that everybody yelled at him for. When he did when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor who never saw Animal House said he was a Duke idiot. And he was just like, okay, I can't win.
Yep.
Can't win on this stupid thing called Twitter.
And then the other two are Sheldon Williams. And Johnny Dawkins.
Oh, Johnny Dawkins is the – Johnny Dawkins was on that 86 team.
Yeah,
he was
the first star for
– Tommy Amaker's not on that list? He's the head coach at Harvard.
Not as a retired number. I'm just talking retired numbers.
I think you'd have to go. I think you'd have to go. You'd have to say, listen, there's no excuse. I know I have a job to do here, but this is a once in a lifetime thing.
It is.
And I got to go.
And it's not like, it's not like it's sudden.
No.
And that's the issue, right? I mean, Bobby Hurley could have gone to the athletic director, could have gone to the other coach and said, listen, hey, circle this date. I know it might be our last game, but, we saw the Pac-12 tournament. I'll be back. He's probably leaving. If he's smart, he would leave sometime tonight. Or possibly even tomorrow morning, fly in, fly out.
That's right.
These guys have got to be there.
They
got to
be there. It's the most incredible
and I don't
retirement.
You know what would be disappointing? Because you can see this happening. Video message.
Yeah, that's true. Leightner better be down there. I'm telling you right now.
Is he doing?
What else is Leightner doing? He better be down there.
He owes his life to him.
Still making I Hate Leightner shirts that he's selling to Kentucky fans?
I hope he's wearing one.
Yeah, I hope he does too. Man, that 30 for 30 on him was the best PR thing I think Leightner ever an athlete has ever done. I went from hating the guy to going, that guy was a good dude. What a good dude. Especially when his mother was on in the early part, and his mother was like, oh, he had to work his tail off. There was no free lunch for him. When he wanted to go to that school, he had to clean mats and do dishes, and like she was like, no, you think we had money because he went to... No, we did not. We were working class people in Buffalo, New York, and my son worked his tail off to go to that private school. And I was like, oh. I thought he was just a rich, snobby kid. And when Jim Calhoun came on, he goes, oh, no. No, no, there was nothing pretty boy about Christian Laettner. He was big, strong, and nasty.
How many Plumleys go?
Do the Plumleys go?
All the Plumleys.
The Plumleys, all of them should go. What about Trajan Langdon? What about the Alaskan Assassin?
Oh, he's got a Boozer.
He's got to be there too. Boozer, yeah.
Boozer's got to be there.
We've just listed off too many good players for one school to have. Right.
And some of them are all on the same team.
Exactly.
Well, all minus right. The Plumleys.
Steve Wiseman. We'll talk about the legacy next as we continue with the Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, again, with Mike Krzyzewski retiring this weekend, looking to hook up with Steve Wiseman of the Herald Sun to just kind of get a legacy on Coach K. Just the general thought. Look, we know it's a big deal. He's been, you know, at Duke for 42 years, 5 national championships, Final Fours, you know, so many to count. It's and all of the great players, as Ron and I were just having a little bit of fun with on that last segment, all of the players that have gone through Duke and Cameron and Durham. And they're all invited to participate in the final home game for Mike Krzyzewski. And it to me, I mean, maybe I'm making a larger deal than this than it is. But just for me, for just going through every stage of my life, from young man to high school to college to early 20s, you know, 30s to having a son now in college, the idea that he has been a presence in my sporting life. I just think it's remarkable. Steve Wiseman joins us from the Herald Sun to talk about the legacy of Coach K. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
Good. I can't imagine what it must be like in leading up to this game. What is the sense of what this is going to be Saturday, how big it's going to be Saturday? Just, we know it's crazy there. I got to think it's on an exponential level.
It is, because of the historic nature of it. I mean, excuse me. You know, Duke and Carolina, whenever they play, it's the biggest game going on around here, right? And this year, like, there's nothing on the line as far as, like, conference championships or anything like that. It's all wrapped up. Duke's got the ACC won already. But, you know, it's Coach K's last game. And there's been 9 months of build-up to this because he made the announcement last June. So we all knew this was the weekend it was going to happen because they were going to end the season with Carolina and at home. So, yeah, it's been, you know, it's been a lot of anticipation, and there's a lot of, like, you know, wow, like, you know, we all, as a community, like, we've made it to this point, you know, all the work we've been doing in the media and everybody getting ready for this, we're here, and it's almost kind of hard to believe, like, you know, in 36 hours from now or whatever, like, you know, he'll never coach another game at Cameron Indoor Stadium.
It is wild when we have athletes who announce or sports figures who announce that they're going to retire after this season, because then we go into that season wondering what it will look like, how it will be received, what will those final moments be like. He is an outstanding basketball team. They won the ACC regular season title. But overall, how has he navigated that? This is your final time in Charlottesville. This is your final time at Chapel Hill. How has he dealt with that and still kept the focus of winning games and keeping his team in the top 25?
Yeah, he's always been very good about and very intentional about, like, okay, I'm in. This is my task right now. I've got to get this done. You know, and kind of compartmentalizing things. I do think over the last few weeks here, it hit him. I mean, the finality of it, which I, you know, just talked about a little bit ago, like, the calendar is here. You can't deny what you're seeing. You know, that there's only a few weeks left. Now we're down to just a few days in the regular season, one more game. But he has been able to give this team what they've needed for the most part. I mean, because, you know, he did have a couple of illnesses where he had to miss an entire game at Wake, and then in the second half of the game at home against, it turned out, Wake Forest also, because he just coached himself into exhaustion trying to act like he's 35 when he's 75 because he wanted to give so much to this team. So it did take a toll on him physically a little bit, and so he did have to draw back a little bit from that and make sure he was sleeping and eating and all that stuff and doing what he needed. But that's what he's done. He's just thrown everything into this team and tried his best to put the other stuff aside, even though I do, again, for the last couple of weeks, some of these stops, you've seen some of the emotions start to come out.
It's such an amazing run for him to have arrived in 1980 and watched the basketball change the way when he got into college basketball, the 3-point shot wasn't in the game. And yet he waded through that. Players stayed for 4 years. He went through that. And then they changed to one and done. He's adapted a lot. Is a lot of how much did he have to change over the last couple of years with, again, just the 1 year of name, image, and likeness, adapting, finally figuring out how to recruit in the one-and-done era. How has he managed that when traditionally he had been the program where people stayed 4 years? You were going to deal with Leitner for 4 years, Grant Hill, Bobby Hurley. You were going to deal with those guys for a long time, and then he had to change to get guys in who were going to leave rather quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it was a complete 180 because, you know, early in the talk about Duke and Carolina rivalry, it was Carolina that had the guys leaving early for the NBA, right? Like Michael Jordan, right, and James Worthy going back to then, and then all of a sudden it turned on a dime because he realized, about a decade ago, that if I want to get the best players and to give Duke the best chance to win, this is the route we have to go. And he wasn't afraid to do that. He's always been adaptable. You talk about all the changes in the game over the last 42 years. The shot clock, for God's sakes, right? I mean,
for shot clock,
started,
exactly.
The four corners at Carolina was lethal because they could bleed the clock for the last 10 minutes of a game. And that changed. So he's always adapted to whatever's going on in the game. And I think, you know, when he went in and coached USA basketball, that helped him with that too, because he was exposed to a different kind of athlete, different kind of players, different skills and everything at that level, and attitudes, frankly. And that, that kind of led him to say, okay, it's okay to do this. We'll get the best players for 1 year. We'll do the best we can with it. I mean, I think he always laments he doesn't have more time with these groups. He really would prefer the 4 year or 3 year players and see them develop over time. But he just realized that wasn't the reality of now, and the game was going to pass him by if he didn't pivot, and he did it.
How close was he in the past and in the years that the rumors were striking about the Lakers or the Nets or any other NBA team that were showing their interest in him? How serious was he to possibly saying, let me give the NBA a try?
Yeah, the closest was 2004 with the Lakers. No doubt about that. He really, you know, he went down the road with them further than he had, you know, any team. And, you know, to the point where, you know, the Lakers were offering to move his entire family to L.A., not just him and his wife, but like his daughters, their husbands, all their kids. You know, that was the selling point of Durham, is like he's got them all here, right? His whole family is here. And they were like, okay, we'll make it work for you, you know? And so it made it hard for him to say no, but he finally, in the end, you know, went with his heart and said, no, college is where I belong. And then he did the USA basketball thing to scratch that itch, so it kind of met both worlds there. But, yeah, that was definitely the closest, was 2004.
I always found him fascinating in this regard because of the longevity and the longevity of excellence. The one thing, it's one thing to stay at a place, but to be consistently in the tournament, to be consistently a team that you had to deal with, you know, of course he had one or two off years, but for the most part, it's always been excellent. And with that, and I said this, I've been saying this, we in this country, we will take you down if you have too much success. We love to attack you and hate you for that. It's okay. It's one thing when they didn't like him and his team, but when America didn't like his players, when young kids went to Duke and they knew that they were going to be rooted against by most of America, is there a side of Mike Krzyzewski we don't get to see where he dealt with that for them at a young age?
Well, he wakes up with a chip on his shoulder to this day. Like he looks for an edge, and I think a lot of great coaches and managers do that. Bill Belichick does that, right? I mean,
right.
Tony La Russa, you know, in baseball was a master of that. Or still is. He's still managing. I forgot about that. But so he did play that. You know, he doesn't like to publicly say, you know, we're the villain and they hate us. But behind the scenes, he does. He thrives on that. He certainly does. And he likes. They like going into a building where people are booing and shutting them up. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And so it's been something that's driven him for 40-some years. Because when he came to this job, you know, Duke was third. And, you know, we talk about the triangle. State and Carolina won national championships in 82 and 83.
Right.
NC State. And Duke was the third wheel. They didn't have much fans. They were, you know, he had to fight not only that, but, you know, Dean Smith and everything and get through that and build Duke. So that drove him. And then it was a matter of just keeping it, you know, maintaining it. And a lot of people aren't able to do that. They're able to climb the mountain but not stay on top of the mountain. But that's what makes him great, is he's able to do that.
I got to think it's got to be a cool recruiting tool to say to a kid, You can go to any other place where if you lose on the road, they'll treat it as business as usual. But if we lose on the road, they storm the court and they celebrate all night.
Consistently. And they always talk about whenever Duke comes to town, oh, it's a sellout crowd. The only sellout crowd they'll have the whole year, you know, a lot of these venues. So, yeah, they do. That is a selling point, that there's something extra special about that. And we'll have to see if it continues, you know, beyond Coach K, right? I mean, you would think it will early on next year, not to get too far ahead here, but if they don't maintain this level, it'll drop off. Because, I mean, that's part of John Shire's challenge, is to keep that going.
You guys are closer to the nucleus of it. You know, again, I've been watching Duke basketball since I was a kid in the 80s. But you guys are in the nucleus of it. Does it get taken for granted how long this guy has been successful?
Well, it does, yes, because, again, in our neighborhood here, you know, Dean Smith did it for a long time, right?
Sure,
so,
sure.
That standard has been set. It's like, okay, this is what we do here, you know, with those two teams. And you know, frankly, Hubert Davis is feeling a little bit of that this year because they're, you know, a bubble team or, you know, looking like a 10th seed maybe at best, which for a lot of programs, they'd be loving that. But at Carolina, there's rumblings like, oh, my gosh, we picked the wrong guy, you know. And yeah, that's – we do appreciate that here because of the expectation, and he's been able to do it. And I think now this weekend, when we talk about all the players coming back from the 42 seasons, that's really going to be driven home, like the range of athletes and stars that have come through this program since 1980 is really, you know, going to be dramatic. And we'll see them all on the court tomorrow before the game.
Yeah, because we were talking about this earlier. Like, it would have been one thing for him as a young man coming out of, you know, coming from Army, to go to Duke and go, look, I'm the third, like you said, I'm a third wheel in this triangle. Let me do this for a couple of years and let me see if I can get an indie, you know, a Kentucky job or an indie, like a level like that. But then he became that place. He became that one of the blue bloods of the sports. Where, like, why would I go anywhere else? I have it the best here.
Exactly. And you know, he really, to his heart, to his core, is loyal. And it comes from his military background, all that stuff. That when Tom Butters, the athletic director that hired him at Duke, you know, retained him after 3 years when they weren't winning. And everybody, and the Iron Deuce, the Boosters wanted him out in 1983. He never forgot that. And then again, after they won the two titles in 91 and 92, you know, in 95 he had that health issue and he had to miss part of the year. And
right.
There was mental and physical health issue there, frankly. And he offered his resignation. He just told us the story again yesterday. He offered his resignation to Tom Butters and said, look, somebody else needs to do this. I can't do this anymore. This is not me. I'm not capable. And Tom Butters turned it down and said, I'm not accepting it. You're going to stay coaching. You're going to come back next year. We're going to build this up again. And then they did it. So that's why he never really entertained leaving here, except for, you talked about the NBA dalliance, but he never even considered another college job. It was never going to happen.
Absolutely.
Just the day he walked on campus, it never happened.
Yeah, because you think about it. I mean, you think about the traditionally good schools in the history of college basketball. Kentucky wasn't this good for this long. UCLA wasn't this good for this long. You know, Indiana wasn't this good for this long. And he built one of the longest sustaining success stories in sports.
Yeah, it's really striking, and to do it at a small, you know, private school in the South, where we talk about the third wheel again. The fan base far more Carolina and NC State fans because of the size of their enrollment, their schools, right?
Right.
So they're always fighting up a hill battle to have as many fans as the other teams. Even now, if they go in the NCAA regional and Carolina's there and Duke's there, all the Carolina fans are going to root against Duke. So it's going to end up being like a road venue. It's happened many times. It's not going to happen this year, but it's happened in the past. So that's something else that should be noted, that he's able to overcome that as well.
Awesome. Great. Steve, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Enjoy this weekend.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Steve Wiseman, the Herald Sun in Durham on Duke, and the final game of Cameron, I should say, for Mike Krzyzewski. We'll see where it goes in the NCAA tournament. Progressive guest line, quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer, only at progressive.com. We'll wrap up the hour and get you set for the weekend on Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. I hope you all have a good weekend. Yeah, you know, there's a couple of things going on. If you're interested in mid-major conference tournaments, you're going to have some finals coming up. The tickets will be punched this weekend. That's a better way to say that. How's that? Some tickets will be punched this weekend.
That's a better way to put it.
That's the way it's going to be. And then next week, oh, yeah, it'll be conference tournament week. I can't
wait
for that.
Next week's insane.
Wait, next week's going to be crazy.
If you're into, professionals missing 10-inch putts, tune into the Invitational.
The Bay Hill, the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill.
Who doesn't like 10-inch putts missed?
Yeah. When I was talking to Will Gray yesterday, I told him that I remembered the Bay Hill in 1990. Robert Gomez, relatively unknown, he hit a 7-iron 176 yards into the cup for a walk-off win beating Greg Norman. It was one of the more electrifying shots in golf. And I remember, kind of just throwing it out there. But then I looked it up because I was like, I want to watch that again. And then I did a little research. It was right there. They have a little plaque on the fairway where the shot was hit.
Nice.
So if you're ever playing Bay Hill, you can try to hit shot from there to see if you knock it in the cup over the water from 176 yards out. Which, by the way,
I can guess how many people have.
Probably everybody, right? When you play,
zero.
I've played Cherry Hills in Denver twice. And Arnold Palmer famously drove the first green at Cherry Hills in the 1960 U.S. Open. And there is a mark on the tee where you can tee off from where Arnold Palmer was. And everybody tries to do it. And even with modern equipment. And I mean, I've played with some good players at Cherry Hills, strong players. I don't know how Arnold did it with like a regular persimmon wood and like a feather ball. It's amazing. All right. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll be back Monday with Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.